Hi, and welcome to Walking on the Wild Side, a podcast dedicated to exploring the natural resources of the Southeast and hopefully instilling in you, our listener, a curiosity about our flora and fauna and fostering a sense of appreciation for the beauty and diversity of our natural resources. As always, I'm joined by my wife and co-host, Gabrielle, who is on her way to becoming quite the naturalist herself.
Hey, y'all, we're back.
Hey, it's time for another episode of Walking on the Wild Side. So, hey, I wonder how many folks from our last podcast got our little teaser.
That's a good question.
Well,
I don't know.
Here's another little hint. You know, if you think you've never seen one, check your wallet. So what are we talking about?
Bald eagles.
Bald eagles. One of my favorite birds. That's one of your favorite birds, too.
It's that time of year for bald eagles.
Boy, when we lived on the coast, we lived in Charleston for, what, about 10, 12 years? And then we lived in Beaufort for a little bit longer. Boy, we were lucky to see bald eagles down there, weren't we?
We sure did.
We got to see a bunch of them.
And this is good timing, too, because we just had President's Day.
Well, oh, good call. Absolutely. Yeah. And also, this is the time of year to see bald eagles because they migrate down here during the winter and they nest. Mm-hmm. And then they leave probably around April. There are some places in South Carolina and other places that they stay year-round. But for the most part, they'll go back up north and you'll get a chance to see them. And, you know, it's funny you talk about the bald eagle being on the dollar bill and other places and stuff like that. You know, it almost became a turkey Ben Franklin had anything to do with it.
That's not very noble and majestic.
Well, I know. He was not a big fan of the bald eagle. I think he thought it was a scavenger bird and things like that, which he was right. But still, come on, man. 6-foot wingspan, 8-pound massive bird with a hooked beak, and he's a raptor.
Yeah, that's pretty magnificent.
Pretty fierce looking bird. And if you've ever seen one up close, And I have to tell you, I had the pleasure one time of actually doing some volunteer work down in Awandaw at the International Center for Birds of Prey with Jim Elliott and the amazing work that him and his volunteers and everyone do there. They asked for my assistance to see if I could help them because they had a bird that had come in for some rehabilitation and it had what's called bumblefoot. Bumblefoot is when they kind of are sitting on standing on a flat surface and their feet get sores. And so they needed to wrap the feet, and they asked if I would come in. And so they said, you got to be really quiet. You can't disturb this bird. You know, he's just really, you know, very acutely aware of everything that goes on around him. So we're not going to talk. We're not going to say anything. But what we need to do is we've got to wrap the talons with fresh dressings. Mm-hmm. I said, all right, what do you want me to do? And they said, well, we'd like for you to hold the legs. And I was like, and they said, no, it's okay. You can hold it. He's wrapped up, so he can't flap or anything like that. They had him in a wrap towel. Mm-hmm. And I said, all right. And they showed me how to hold it. So I reached down and I grabbed his feet. And his talons were the size of my hands.
Oh my God.
2-inch claws on those talons.
Wow.
Massive bird. And he's sitting there looking around, looking back and forth and everything. His eyes, I'll never forget, were so clear, so sharp. They had that kind of brow over the eye. And it made him look so fierce. And I remember looking at it thinking, my God, that beak is huge. And so we're sitting there, and I'm holding the bird, and they're like, you're doing fine. You're doing fantastic. That's great. And I'm holding the bird, and they said, don't stare at him. So I couldn't look at him. I kind of had to glance at him every once in a while, you know. And I'll never forget, a guy was putting in a central vacuum system.
Oh, no.
And he let the door slam, and that bird was like, and he sat up and started,
oh my God,
snapping his beak like 3 inches away from my nose. And I just kind of slowly turned my head away, didn't look at the bird, and he calmed down and he sat back down and they finished up, you know, and they put the bird in the enclosure, the little kennel, and they took him back out and they're like, oh my gosh, that was amazing. You did so well. And I was like, well, thank you. Where's your bathroom?
Yeah,
I've got to clean my britches out.
Exactly.
But I will never forget just how big the bird was, just that feeling of harnessed power in my hands because it was just a huge bird. And then those eyes and that beak was just, oh, what an amazing experience. And I'm sure that's kind of why a lot of folks like to volunteer at the Raptor Center, because you get a chance to be really close to these magnificent birds of prey. And Jim and those guys do a fantastic job down there, as do a lot of the folks that have Raptor Centers all across the nation. Mm-hmm. You know, they do such
a
wonderful job.
Have a great one up there in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Absolutely, they sure do. So bald eagles are one of those kind of things that you're going to see them and know what you saw, or you're going to see them and go, what the heck was that? That bird stands out.
Yes, they do.
What is the thing that stands out about a bald eagle to you the most?
I would say they're, number one, their size. Number two, their coloration. Just that white head and white tail.
Yep,
it's unmistakable.
It is, especially, and you can see them flying. You can see that big white tail. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, they're adults. They're going to be 5 years old for them to have the white head and the white tail. But when you say the white head and the white tail, that just cracks me up because, you know, I love scientific names.
Well, yes.
Yeah, so the scientific name is Haleaetus leucocephalus. Haleaetus means sea eagle. Yeah. Say that five times real fast, would you? Haleaetus means sea eagle,
mm-hmm.
and leuco means white, and cephalus means head. So sea eagle with a white head. Kind of hard to get more descriptive than that, right? So I love that scientific name. That's cool that it describes it. And so, yeah, like you said, the bald eagle is a big bird with a white head and a white tail as an adult. The immatures are all dark, like chocolate brown. And then they get some mottling in their plumage as they get a little older. And then, of course, when they turn five, they're sexually mature. They'll have their white head and their white tail. But to see them changing into that adult mm-hmm. is fascinating. They start off with a brown beak, brown eyes, and brown plumage with no white head, no white tail. And then over a period
of
5 years.
Kind of unremarkable.
Well, yeah, just huge. But then all of a sudden the beak changes from brown to yellow. And the eyes go from brown to yellow. So the beak, when you see it at about 3.5 to 4, it looks like chocolate melting off of the yellow beak. It's just splotchy brown and yellow, which is kind of cool. But the one thing remains the same on these birds, whether they're young birds or adults, is their bright yellow feet. So you're mm-hmm. they're always going to have those yellow feet. And, you know, a lot of times that people can mix them up with the vulture, right?
Yeah. The vulture or the osprey. I get a lot of people confused them with an osprey, too.
Well, a big bird, not nearly as big as a bald eagle, but it's hard to gauge size until they're side by side, right? But a bald eagle and a osprey do actually share the same habitat, mm-hmm. right? And they probably do the things that people think eagles do. You know, they feed on fish, you know, as well. So, but with an osprey, you know, they have that brown stripe through the eye, and they've got that white belly and stuff like that. But a lot of people will accuse an osprey of being a young eagle, and that's not the case in that situation. But the bald eagle in flight is, once you learn and can recognize a bald eagle in flight, there's no mistaking it. I can see those things 2 miles up in the sky and know it's a bald eagle because they hold their wings flat and straight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the vulture doesn't. The vulture's just got that shallow V, and when they fly, it's a very lazy fly. Let's fly over here. And you know why, right? You know why they don't have strong, powered flight like a bald eagle?
Because their prey aren't going anywhere anytime soon.
They don't have to fly fast after dead stuff, that's for
sure. That's right.
So, yeah, so the difference between one is a powerful predator and a scavenger, and the other one is pretty much just a scavenger as well.
Yeah.
So, in South Carolina, though, the bald eagles, they're probably about, I'm going to say, around 6-7 pounds, have about a 6-foot wingspan,
mm-hmm.
you know. Hey, how long do you think they live in the wild?
I would guess like 8 to 10 years.
Pretty close, yeah. You know what? They can live actually up to 30 years.
What?
Yeah, most of them's around like 15 to 20, but yeah, they can live up to 30 years. Being that large apex predator, you know, that top top dog out there. They mate for life. And when they mate and the female lays eggs, she normally lays somewhere around 2 to 4 eggs, and they hatch out normally 1 to 2 eaglets, sometimes 3, maybe rarely 4, but for the most part 2. Now, these little eaglets start off, they're like 4 ounces. They're tiny.
That's
little
little
guys. Yeah. But they're one of the fastest growing organisms because they'll go, in a matter of 10 weeks, they'll go from a 4-ounce chick to basically an 8-pound fledgling.
Wow.
That's growing fast.
10 weeks.
I mean, I hear people complain about they got teenagers at home and stuff like that. This is a little bit a more accelerated pace than that, I think. And then they fly off. They'll hang out. I think they'll stay around for about like 5 or 6 months. And then they'll migrate back up north. And then the following year when they come back, they'll come back to the same territory. And the male and female will chase them off. You know, because they'll be competing with
We are empty nesters. Get out.
It. You're done.
Literally.
We fed you for 10 weeks.
You're on your own.
And you tripled in size, so just get over it. So, yeah, so the population in bald eagles is one of those things that's kind of an interesting story as well. You know, bald eagles and golden eagles from, like, the West Coast, and we still will see some golden eagles like around the Appalachians and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And occasionally we'll see them on the coast in migration. You'll occasionally see them. I think the first one I ever saw was actually at the, that was Huntington Beach State Park. I actually saw one on a bird walk in the wintertime, and it was definitely a golden eagle, no doubt. And they're even bigger than a bald eagle.
Right. They're the largest eagle, aren't they?
They're the one in North America. They're definitely the largest. Mm-hmm. So what's funny is when you think about size of bald eagles, have you ever heard of a rule called Bergman's rule? Have you heard of that? You've heard me talk about that before? Mm-hmm. What is that? You remember?
That the further north you go, the larger
the animal gets. That's exactly right. Bergman's rule says from the equator going north, size increases with these animals. So that's why when you see like a lot of the large ungulates, you see a lot of the predators, carnivores and things like that, they get larger as you go up north, you know. So, yeah, so that Bergman's rule kind of stays in play for like birds and other animals and things as well. And it's kind of crazy. You know, you and I are planning that trip to Kaktovik in Alaska.
Uh-huh.
So when we go there, those northwestern eagles, they're actually going to average probably about a foot and a half larger wingspan.
Wow.
And possibly about a pound or two larger in size.
That would be incredible to see.
It'd be neat to see that and compare the East Coast with the West Coast of bald eagles, which would be kind of interesting for all that stuff.
Yeah.
So the one thing about bald eagles, I think, that just blows people away is the size of their nest.
Yeah. Those things are massive.
Oh, my gosh. We thought osprey nests were big, and they are. But a bald eagle's nest is twice as big as that. You know, a bald eagle's nest can be almost 6, sometimes 8 feet across, you know, 10, even 12 feet deep, and they add to it every year.
You know, because they keep coming back and using that same nest year after year.
Now, there is one thing that can happen to cause a bald eagle to abandon its nest. Any idea what that might be?
Well, there's not anything that's going to take it over.
Guess what?
What?
Great horned owls.
Oh. Really?
Great horned owls have been known to chase bald eagles out of their nest, especially those that get on territory late, and the great horned owl actually is able to come in and jump into that nest first. Yeah, a horned owl can actually fight
anything.
Them off. Oh, they're fierce.
They are. They're the flying tiger.
The flying tiger, that's right. But for the most part, nothing else is going to challenge bald eagles for their nest. So they come in early nesters, too.
So how much does one of those massive nests weigh approximately?
Oh, I'm not sure. I've seen the size of the limbs that are used to make the nest. So bald eagles will not use man-made platforms for one thing.
Right. So when we see those poles and stuff out in the water, those are osprey.
Yep, pretty much.
They nest on those. Yeah.
And of course, a great horned owl in the winter. They'll take those over too. But a bald eagle nest in pretty much live trees. And I'd say probably in South Carolina, if not the Southeast, I would say a majority of their nests are actually in live pine trees because they can actually bear the weight of these huge nests that they have. You know, now they'll see them also in cypress trees in certain areas and stuff. But for the most part, they're going to be mainly in large pine trees. So, you know, always look for a bald eagle nest in a live tree. You're not going to see them in nesting platforms, and you're not going to see them on telephone poles and stuff, just like you said. So, and a lot of people think they do, but so the interesting thing is most of our bald eagles in South Carolina are found along the coast because, of course, that's where most of our water is, right?
Yep. And they love fish.
They do. And also they love ducks and other waterfowl. Yep. So they follow the migration, usually coming here around October, November, sometimes as early as September. Mm-hmm. And they'll come in following that migration. And they'll feed, they'll have plenty of food for their babies, and they'll turn around in April, and they'll fly all the way back up north.
Yeah.
Now, there are some eagles that actually are resident population. They're permanent residents in South Carolina. In fact, there's a couple near the Catawba River where I work that are actually year-round eagles, which is kind of crazy.
Oh, neat.
But for the most part, they migrate back up north. I didn't see my first bald eagle in the wild till I was about 18 or 19 years old.
Wow.
And it wasn't because I didn't know I wanted to be a naturalist.
I think you came out of the womb knowing she wanted to be a naturalist.
I'm pretty sure I did, and I really wanted to see an eagle. But, you know, we were told in biology classes and things like that, that DDT had taken its toll, and that bald eagles were on the brink of extinction.
Yes.
And that was true, because in the 70s, there were only 18 breeding pairs in South Carolina. In fact, in the 60s, there were only about 400 breeding pairs in the entire lower 48 states.
Wow.
So, and that was, part of it was due to the bounty that was on eagles early in the 40s and 50s, but then also the widespread use of DDT.
Right.
And we've all heard about DDT. We've heard it about how they affected the peregrine falcon, how they affected the osprey, the pelican, and also the bald eagle. And what it did, DDT poisoning, biomagnified in the aquatic populations, you know, so you would get it kind of in the fish mainly. And so it caused thinning of the eggshells. Mm-hmm. So when they would go to sit on the eggs, of course, it wouldn't support their weight and it'd crush them.
Yeah.
And for a long time, there was just rarely any babies being born in the population. So the population of all these birds, including bald eagles, plummeted.
Wow.
Well, the beautiful thing was they, I think around the 40s and into the 50s, they actually outlawed DDT.
Yeah.
Okay. So they outlawed DDT, and then in 1973, they enacted one of the greatest wildlife acts I think any government has ever done, and it was the Endangered Species Act.
Yes.
And this was basically to help species of animals and plants in peril. And when they did that and they eliminated DDT, we started seeing the ospreys bounce back, we started seeing the pelicans bounce back, and we also saw the bald eagle bounce back. So by that time, there were probably over 1,500 pairs in 1982, right? And we started seeing the population of bald eagles in South Carolina come up. And so the first time I can recall seeing a bald eagle in the wild, I was actually at the Santee Coastal Reserve on a field trip at Clemson for one of my wildlife management classes. And I actually saw the bald eagle and saw it fly into the nest. So I got to see a bald eagle's nest as well as a bald eagle. And I was just over the moon.
Right.
And from that point forward in my career, I've been fortunate to see hundreds of bald eagles. And I never get tired of seeing them.
Right.
You know, if you ever get tired of seeing a bald eagle in the wild, you need to check your pulse. You know, something's wrong with you, I think. And you know, when I did some bird walks years and years ago, I had a person that was doing bird walks for me at one time. And one lady got so excited about seeing a bald eagle, and he just smirked and said, why are you getting so excited? It's a trash bird. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. How dare you call this amazing bird?
Bet you didn't have him back to do anymore.
No, you're not spreading that crap. That's sorry. You got to appreciate that bird. That's a beautiful bird. Especially with my history, having not seen one until I was 18. I mean, come on. That's just not something you'll say in front of me that often. So we got rid of the pesticides, and we had the Endangered Species Act.
I wish we would do that with the honeybees.
Oh, I know.
And
hopefully these neonicotinoids hopefully they'll get banned soon. You know, I think that's one of the big issues that we talked about in one of our other podcasts.
Yeah.
The bald eagle, poor thing. I mean, they have a heck of a life here. And just as soon as they got over the DDT, and just as soon as they got over and recovered because of the Endangered Species Act, something else came along.
Of course.
So they started seeing these bald eagles kind of be disoriented. Mm-hmm. Not able to stand up, kind of stagger around, not be able to fly. And when they did autopsies on some of these dead eagles, they found that they had lesions on the white sheath of the brain.
Ooh.
Okay. And they discovered that they had a form of myelinopathy. It was called the avian vacuolar myelinopathy, AVM for short. And it caused these lesions on the white sheath of the brain, the myelin sheath of the brain. Mm. And it caused these issues, and they didn't know what was happening. And through research, they finally figured out that it was actually traced back to a type of blue-green algae. And this blue-green algae was found in hydrilla. And hydrilla was it's an exotic aquatic weed that was brought in to the United States and spread rapidly through reservoirs. And so realizing that was happening, the hydrilla was being eaten by coots and other waterfowl. And, of course, bald eagles were feeding on them. And, of course, a coot that had AVM was easy prey for a bald eagle.
Sure.
So they'd pick them right off and feed on them. So, of course, that made them a little more susceptible to AVM. Well, once they finally figured that out, then they had this nice campaign where they started, and you've probably seen signs up around boat ramps and stuff like that. Please rinse off your boat. Make sure you're not hauling this stuff trailer. You know, because a lot of these fishermen and duck hunters and stuff will go from pond to pond, lake to lake.
Right.
And this stuff, I mean, it can stay dormant and it gets off of the trailer of the boat into a new place and spreads like wildfire.
Yeah.
So through chemical and biological controls and a public relations campaign, making people aware of these aquatic weeds, they were able to reduce that quite a bit. And hey, all right, so the Eagles started
imagine,
to rebound.
Yeah, yeah, imagine that.
Well, you know what? Guess what?
Something else came along.
So the next thing to come along was they were also noticing very similar symptoms with these birds, but they didn't notice the lesions on the myelin sheaths. They were just noticing the behavior was the same. And when they did autopsies on their birds, they found that there were high concentrations of pentobarbitals. So sodium pentobarbital, they traced back to animals being euthanized.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of the animal shelters and vet offices and stuff like that were euthanizing the animals. And instead of incinerating them, which could be expensive, they were actually sending them to the landfills.
Wow.
So they'd put these animals in landfills, and when they were churning up the landfills and stuff like that, a lot of these animals were being exposed, and the bald eagles or scavengers as well.
Yeah.
They were feeding on these barbiturate-laden corpses of all these animals, and so once again they started going through pentobarbital poisonings and stuff. So they finally identified that, and hey, all right, the bald eagles started recovering again, and guess what?
I'm sensing a recurring theme.
It is. God, these birds can't catch a break.
No, they can't.
And it's all because they're apex predators. So the next biggest one that's actually affecting them, and that's still affecting them today, is lead poisoning.
Mm.
Okay. And it's easy to think, oh, lead poisoning, well, I know where that's from. That's probably because of the water and stuff like that. Actually, it's due to years and years and years of hunting with lead shot. So lead, actually, you know, you think about if you've ever seen a duck hunt in action, you know, there's a lot of shooting and in a lot of situations, not a lot of ducks falling.
Right.
So all that lead is getting into the reservoirs and places like that and sinking to the bottom. And birds like coots and ducks and things like that to feed on seeds and tubers and algae and stuff, eat that and ingest that. Well, birds like the bald eagle, when they kill coots and waterfowl, stuff like that, they have an affinity for the organ meat, and of course the stomach contents and things like that, and also the liver, where a lot of this gets concentrated. That's what happens, and so we started seeing bald eagles show acute signs of lead poisoning. In addition to that, a lot of duck hunters, when they cleaned their ducks, they would strip out the internal organs and keep the meat, and they would have gut piles, and eagles were finding the gut piles. And they're ingesting all these pellets that way as well.
Right.
And then, of course, the other very sad part of it is direct lead poisoning, which is accidental and sometimes purposeful shooting of bald eagles, which still occurs.
Even though it's illegal.
It is illegal. You know, and that's what happens. I mean, you know, a lot of hunters are conservationists and wonderful and amazing hunters who enjoy being out in the woods, but there's always those rogue folks. And they're actually frowned upon by the hunting community, but a lot of these rogue folks feel like they've got to protect their ducks from the bald eagles. And bald eagles, man, I'm going to tell you what, if you've ever seen one hunt a coot or hunt a duck, it's an amazing thing. They're endurance hunters. You know, now granted, they'll power into a flock and they'll grab whatever bird they can grab because they're just a big, bad dude. But also what they'll do is they'll find coots and stuff on the water, and they'll almost pin them down on the water by just flying over close. And they'll dive down, and they'll foresee every time they dive down, the coots will dive, or the duck will dive. And this goes on and on and on until finally the coot just can't catch his breath and can't dive anymore, and the eagle just picks him off. I mean, just a fascinating. I've seen that time and time again at Savannah Wildlife Refuge and places like that. So and just an amazing hunter. But, you know, I can't tell you how many hunters have come to me and said, man, I saw an eagle the other day. He had a peculiar behavior. And they'll describe exactly what happened there, too. So. But, you know, a lot of states have, because of this lead poisoning and stuff, and it's not just affecting, obviously, bald eagles, but it can affect other animals as well. You know, the human animal.
Yeah.
I think you made this point. You know, if there's lead in the ducks and we're eating the ducks, are we consuming lead?
Yep.
Yeah,
better believe it.
Probably so. So what they've done is a lot of states have actually passed laws that make it illegal to hunt with lead shot. And they're saying copper shot and steel shot. So more and more states are making it illegal. Now, there are still some folks out there that like to hunt with lead because they like the softness of the lead, the hitting power of the lead, things like that. But I would say for you guys that are and gals that are hunters and you eat the meat that you're hunting for, need to be very aware of the impacts of lead has on the human body as well. So hopefully folks will continue to shift over to steel and to copper instead of lead. So we'll see that happen. Yeah. So you got any other questions about bald eagles? Did that answer all
I think you've covered it.
You think so? Are you still excited about eagles, or are you going to say every time you see an eagle, you'll be like, oh, God, I got to listen
never.
To him talk?
As long as I got a pulse.
Well, same here. And I'll tell you what, speaking of getting excited, I'm excited because you know what time it is.
It's teaser time.
Yes, that's right. Give a little tease for the next podcast coming up. And you have a tease for the next podcast coming up?
Yeah, we, as many of you probably have seen, spring has sprung.
Oh, my God.
We've got some daffodils coming up in our yard.
Yeah, daffodils coming up.
My nose has been running.
I was about to say, one sure sign of spring for the summer is pollen.
And another sure sign of spring are these little chorus creatures, we'll call them.
Yes.
These chorus creatures that we start hearing in early spring that lets us know that it's just around the corner.
That's a good hint.
Spring is peeping around the corner.
Oh man, that is a good hint.
Yeah.
I like that. And hey, special shout out to you because you went and got your wilderness first aid certification.
I did.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
That was a difficult course, but you nailed it with flying colors.
I did.
That brings me to another harbinger of spring because I was hiking out on one of the trails and I saw the trout lilies.
Yes.
Man, they're starting to pop
up. Gorgeous.
So, you know, in the Appalachians, wildflower season is coming out. We might even do a podcast about some of the wildflowers.
I think we might
even do it on location in the field.
Wow.
Talk about the ones we're seeing. But so, yeah, though, there's your teaser time. And looking forward to seeing you guys next time we do our podcast. But remember, if you want to see a bald eagle, you can't see it inside. The only way you're going to see a bald eagle, if you're outside walking on the wild side.